Welcome to Season 10, Episode 1 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we decide to talk about our plans and goals for gaming this year. Again, welcome to Season 10, Episode 1 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this episode is Chris and Paul. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to 2018. Does that sound weird?
Thanks.
Definitely.
A little bit.
Yeah, in two more years, we'll be talking about 2020, and then it's like, where the fuck's my cybernetic implants, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I know. Well, actually, you know, it's funny, though, because I think the original Cyberpunk game was set in 2013, was that right? Do I have that right? I want to say it was.
2017, I thought it was.
2017? Okay, close enough. 2013, 2017. All this stuff was supposed to happen already. We're not. It hasn't happened.
Yep. No, not at all.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That said, I am in the new residence. So anyone here is an echo, that is because, well, we haven't quite soundproofed the new house yet. So I apologize for that. But that hopefully it won't be too bad.
Oh no, you were right. It was 2013. My bad.
Oh, jeez. Okay. See, my memory is not as shot as I thought it was. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so it was already supposed to happen, and then it's like, we're gonna move it ahead 7 years because that makes more sense. And you know, I still have a weird soft spot for the old Cyberpunk game.
I never played that.
What was it?
I never played that one.
Oh, Cyberpunk at all?
Yeah, never played that system at all.
Yeah, it was okay. In some ways, I think I liked the original rule set a little better. I don't know why. I think it was just because it was really thin, and it wasn't. I don't know, just one of those weird things. It's also funny because back then I remember reading. I don't know. They were talking at one point in one of the books talking about taking, firearms and making them bullpup weapons, and I'm thinking who. How can you do that mechanically? And now, many years later, I'm like, oh, yeah, you can do that. It's just one of those funny things that you learn. So anyway, we should probably talk about format for the show for the upcoming year. We have decided to stick to one topic per episode instead of the two or three that we've been doing. A lot of that was just, I think, to keep time down because we were really getting, especially when there's three of us, I think we were getting to, almost an hour and a half?
Yeah,
that is true.
I think that was getting a little too long. Some people will be happy. Some people will be like, well, you should just have dropped the Kickstarters. Well, we could have, but then that's a lot of stuff. Interesting stuff happens in the Kickstarters. So, I don't have a problem putting it at the end, as one of our listeners a long time ago suggested. That's fine. That way as soon as we hit the Kickstarters, they can turn it off. That's fine. I think they kind of miss out on a few things, but whatever works for him. If we have any really important news, as usual, we'll hit it up first before we hit the topic. Is there really any news?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Nothing significant.
Yeah. I mean, it's the new year. So maybe we should just go ahead and hit off into the topic because I'm all fired up. How about you guys?
Sounds good.
Yeah. I'm going to say right off the bat, I want to game more this year. That goes without saying for most people. But I think how I'm going to do it is not going to be my current group that I've been gaming with on Thursday. God love them. We have a membership problem. I'm sure you guys have had membership problems in gaming groups in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
And, well, the problem is that we have four people total that we can sort of rely on, I feel. And so when one of them can't show up, it's typically not enough people to play.
Yep.
So that gets to be, well, what are we going to do? We can play a board game. We can do Cards Against Humanity. We can do any number of other things. We can play a game of zombies or whatever, but it's like, it's still not the same as playing an RPG. And I'm not trying to, and it's just one of those things. I mean, we've had a recent we've had some issues with just, once we have some additional people that do play with us, but right now I don't feel they're as reliable as the other four. And that's not to say anything bad against them. It's just, I just don't feel like they're reliable. So I'm almost not counting them. Plus, it's almost like this cascade effect. Once one person doesn't show up, all of a sudden two or three more people say they can't show up. And it's like, well, we still only, even with six, that means we only have two people.
Yeah.
So you're just like, fuck. So
it's hard to keep a campaign going that way.
Yeah, I agree. So we're not sure as a group if we're still working out that group portion. I feel kind of like what I've done in the past. I think I'm going to end up doing a lot more Roll 20 again this year. That's, what was that?
Said interesting.
It sucks, but I think using Roll 20 as a virtual tabletop and finding players that way seems to, honestly, I tend to get more reliable people.
Fair enough.
Or I can always, it's like I always have enough slots that I can always add a player, because if a player drops, I'm almost always getting a new player. If that makes any sense on Roll 20. There's always someone willing that wants to play.
No, it makes perfect sense, because one of the things I've noticed in my local community is it's hard to get a group together. Like, even though quite a few of us on my Sunday gaming group are in the city of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, we got two players that aren't, and honestly, without them, it wouldn't be as fun. And just the fact that you have the internet available to you to get new players is just, it's good.
Yeah, and I think I hate to say it, not that virtual tabletop will ever really replace in-person face-to-face, but there's been a lot of times I've been doing a lot of face-to-face where I'm like, shit, I really wish I was almost just, and I know this sounds odd. I almost feel like sometimes that while, because I'm still doing role-playing, I'm still almost doing pencil and paper, but the ability of having, the online map, which, again, there's a lot of work in that, and having the tokens instead of carrying around miniatures, it's so useful. I mean, even barring everything else, just having the map and the tokens is a tremendous asset. And I know, like some of the people, like one of the guys that I play with, did he buy a TV or something? He bought something I think he was going to lay down flat. And he was actually thinking about using, like Roll 20 or one of those other things as an electronic map to display.
Oh, interesting. And that's kind of cool.
Maybe have a piece of plexiglass or something on top, and maybe we use physical miniatures or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you're already halfway there. You might as well just use the pogs, as I like to call them. Because it's like, that's really it. I use those little token makers, and it's like, to me, that's like more useful than having. And especially with the way Roll 20, it's like, with the APIs and stuff that go on, it's like I can auto-number my minions. So it's like someone can say, oh, I'm going to attack minion number 35. Well, you know which fucking minion that is. It's not like, well, which one was 35? Oh, it's this guy with the bent sword. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. You get so used to those little things, and it's just like it makes like certain complexities of gaming easy. And especially with like Savage Worlds, I'm at the point now, or I was, I'm sure I have to do some updates, where they, running Savage Worlds on Roll 20 for me was easy with the API. Players almost didn't even know really how to play Savage Worlds. They just had to be able to go like, I'm going to attack with fighting. Okay, go. I'm going to use fighting, and, it would already roll their wild die. It would tell them which one, you could see which one's higher. You could use that one. If it would explode, it would roll the explosion for you, and so on and so forth. And it's just like, that's 10 times easier than.
So have you played anything besides Savage Worlds on Roll 20?
Done a little D&D. Done a little Traveler.
Okay.
I mean, especially with, like, D&D, they have so much for that. That's pretty easy.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
But a lot of it has been Roll 20. It's been either D&D or Roll 20. I mean Savage Worlds.
Okay.
And even with Savage Worlds, of course, everybody who, I run one way and somebody else plays a different, you know, runs a different way. And sometimes I'm just like, Jesus, you know, you're like, wow, I wish I could I could have you use my APIs because your life would be 10 times easier.
Mm-hmm. So, just click a button.
What was that?
Just click a button.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it depends on what you're doing. And they're just, I'm not saying Roll20 is perfect because it's certainly not. But mm-hmm. I do think that for what I want to get out of gaming right now, it might be the more viable method. You know, I mean, if I want a game at least every other week, I know, because that's what I was doing with Roll20 last time. I was always gaming every other week. There was not a time that I'm like, oh, we're going to, I can, you know, there's not enough players, we're going to skip. I think that happened like once or twice, you know, the entire time. Other than that, I almost always had players. And especially with something like Roll20, I always feel like as long as I got two players, I can run.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel a little weird when there's only one guy, unless you're just wanting to show them the rules.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, especially with the way most of the adventures for Savage Worlds are written, they never really assume how many characters are present. They always, you know, a lot of the adventures are like, if there's minions, it's like, oh, three per player character, two per player character, one per player character. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, if there's a party of six and there's two per player character, there's 12 minions. That's pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because of the way the rest of the system works, it usually, you know, play balance is maintained, if you will. I mean, in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, I always felt that their adventures, for certain things, scale. Usually, if the wild card can be tougher, can be easier or tougher, depending on the number of players. That's the only thing that ever really varies. So, but usually that's, you know, usually you have to find out how well your players are with whatever they have works against most of the opposition, and sometimes you have to even modify the opposition up or down, depending. So, but I mean, so that's, what was that?
Do you have any definitive plans for what Savage Worlds you want to play, either online or is there any campaigns or specific adventures you're looking to get knocked out?
Well, you know, two. One is honestly, actually three. I think I want to do another Last Parsec one of some sort. I wouldn't mind maybe making it a little bit more traveler-like than what's existing. And two, Solomon Kane, I don't care whoever introduced that to, almost everyone I ever met loves Solomon Kane.
Okay.
You know, the setting, and especially there's a whole cornucopia of adventures just for Solomon Kane. I mean, there's enough for me to play one adventure a week for over a year.
Wow. Nice.
You know, so it's like, to me, that's an easy kill to have. Just, it's like, hey, you know, I have to do some prep work for the adventure, but all I have to do is choose the adventure and do a little prep work, and psh, there we go. I don't even have to think about it. I can run Solomon Kane, especially on Roll20, you know, in short order. I mean, I probably only need, like, if I was going to run the adventure, I'd probably only need, like, an hour of prep time.
That's good.
Just to get the map in there and maybe do a few, maybe the monster, you know, get the monster stats or whatever. But that's it. So definitely some more Last Parsec. Definitely some more Solomon Kane. But the big one, let's face it, what was the most recent Kickstarter?
Flash Gordon?
Flash Gordon. I have say, I definitely want to run some Flash Gordon.
Oh, man, I would love to play that.
You know, I definitely have to read. I mean, they just released the PDF for people to download. And I got it downloaded, but I haven't read it yet.
If you ever need any reference material for that, I highly recommend Titan Comics out of the UK releases library edition hardcover collections of all the old Flash Gordon stuff.
Cool.
And they're absolutely they're gorgeous. So they're like from the 40s and 30s and 40s. I think it's the 30s and 40s. And they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Really, really nice stuff.
So yeah, definitely that's my one plan. Excuse me, is definitely do some Flash Gordon. I mean, Flash Gordon is one of those weird things. It just seems silly, and it is at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
But it is I mean, especially for pulp adventures, they actually made a comment about this. It's like Flash Gordon is like the prototype of almost every pulp adventure that has happened since his introduction in a lot of ways.
Yes, I could see that.
And they were saying, it's like, you know, they were talking about, it's like, how do you stat Flash Gordon when it's like, we designed a game with pretty much where a lot of the stuff, like, you know, edges that you'd get are really stuff that he probably had or has. You know, it's kind of weird. It's just like, okay, I get that. So I think that's kind of cool. So, but definitely that's something I want to do. I want to see how the new cliffhanger thing works, because they have that whole new action where, you know, at a certain point the players can like flip the cliffhanger token to the cliffhanger side, and you basically go to a cliffhanger, and then that allows them like some sort of special bennies to do some stuff later.
Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting because it creates the dynamic. To me, it creates the dynamic where, you know, how like, and let's say most D&D adventures, we don't want to get captured by the orcs. Well, in Flash Gordon, you might flip the token, and one of the results of the cliffhanger would be, we're going to get captured by the enemy, and then we have to escape. But that gives us a bonus for later on in the adventure. At least I think that's how that's supposed to work, something along those lines. And I'm like, that's a very interesting dynamic, and it creates a situation where the players want to actually maybe be in the cliffhanger versus, I don't want to lose. Well, you're not losing. You're just postponing your winning.
Yes.
You know? I don't know. It's one of those weird things in story. I mean, especially, I know you've all had that in gaming where it's just like, what the hell's going on here? It's like, you know, it's like, realistically, you should just say, eh, sure, let's be captured for right now, and I'll sort it out later. I don't want to fight everybody at this exact moment. But, you know, most players will. They'll just like, screw it, kill them all. I don't care.
Yep.
Blow up the building. Why are you blowing up the building? Why wouldn't I blow up the building? Because there's other people in it. Well, screw them all. You know, that kind of thing.
There's 300 of them and 4 of you. We charge at them.
Yes, yeah, something along those lines. So,
okay.
I think other than that, I mean, those are my primary plans and goals for this year, is to get a little more gaming done. If I can do it with my own group, you know, face-to-face group, I'd love to. But my backup plan is definitely probably do more Roll 20. And then, you know, probably not right away, but eventually definitely do some Flash Gordon. If not, I'd love to play in Flash Gordon rather than Game Master it. But hey, if I have to Game Master it, I will.
Oh, I think both will be quite fun. So, yeah. Either side of the screen for Flash Gordon should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, and you know, especially with Flash Gordon, it's going to be tough because it's like you're going to have to pick your own mutable point in the Flash Gordon timeline of events.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or just honestly, make them up yourself. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
I think that's the thing, especially with something like that. You have to just say, you know, even Flash Gordon has been mutable. It's like, you know, it's interesting. They actually include a little bit of history about Flash Gordon in the print book. I kind of read that, a little bit of that, and it's like, you know, and especially if you read Wikipedia, you know, you're like, you get the history of that, and it's like he started off in the original comics as a polo player, a polo player, and then of course years later, you know. Oh, he's a football player, and then he's, in some indication, he's a football player and a polo player.
Nice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, all works for me. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, you have various cartoons and redos where, oh, Flash Gordon's some weird teenager. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever.
Yeah, the original black and white serials.
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah, those things are bloody awesome.
Yeah.
You know, well, mind you, you probably shouldn't look too hard at that, but
no.
You can definitely tell the era.
They're actually quite good, especially for the serials that were produced at that time. They're actually quite good.
Yeah, besides, it's one of the main characters, Dr. Zarkov, is a Russian who actually attacks Flash Gordon in the first episode and then becomes his closest and dearest friend. Mm-hmm. So, a Russian good guy in the 30s during the Red Revolution. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And then, let's face it, you know, in many ways, Dale Arden was definitely no damsel in distress at a certain level.
True. Yeah.
You know.
Nor was the princess. What's her name? I can't remember the name of the princess off the top of my head. Is that what was that? What it was?
Yeah,
sounds right.
Daughter of Ming. Okay.
Yeah, daughter of Ming. Eventually, wife of Prince Baron.
Yep.
Yeah, and one of the things I started watching with a couple of buddies of mine, of course, is the '80s amalgamation Defenders of the Earth, which stars, among other characters, Flash Gordon, and he has a son, and he's a dick.
Oh yeah, Flash Gordon, Mandrake the Magician.
Mandrake the Magician, yep.
The Phantom.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
Lothar, the
which was, apparently, I never realized, it's like I'd never heard of him before, but apparently I guess he's always been a companion of Mandrake the Magician.
Yeah.
Oh, that's supposed to be Mandrake's, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so they obviously turned him from a sidekick to a relative equal, and that's why they bicker like an old married couple.
He got an upgrade.
You know, and then of course, you know, Ming was a dick, and you know, Dale Arden died in the first episode. It was kind of a weird thing, but
it was.
But you know, God love. You know, it's like I love that show just because it's like I kind of like the idea of the Phantom back then.
Mm-hmm. The Phantom's helicopter is great. That skull helicopter, that thing is fantastic.
Personal favorite is how the cat was the most competent member of the team.
Oh,
so whatever danger happened, he just mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, no, that was I don't know. I think that's on Amazon Prime right now.
I have the entire series on DVD. So
okay, but I'm just saying. I think that I want to say that's on Amazon Prime. I actually discovered on my Roku box. Mm-hmm. Not that this has anything to do with anything outside of just weird serials, is on my Roku box, there's a channel like called Sci-Fi Classics that you can get, and it has commercials in it, but it has like some of the Space Patrol serial in there. It has like, you know, This Island Earth. It has, you know, The Day the Earth Stood Still. It has, you know, When Worlds Collide and some other weird science fiction classics that, you know, you gotta watch just for the hell of it.
Oh yeah.
So it's like, you know, I mean, that's the thing today. It's just like, I love that old science fiction, even if it's a little goofy. So there you go. I guess that's my thing. Outside of Solomon Kane, I think it's going to be more of a science fiction year this year.
Fair enough.
Or science fantasy, if you... Flash Gordon's really science fantasy.
True.
Dude, dig into the pulps, put your two fists together, and see where it goes.
I've talked enough, so what are you guys planning?
I'll go for a poll.
Let's see here. For this year, last year I got a fair bit of gaming in, but a lot of it was fairly standard games, except for some Mage the Awakening. So this year, obviously play more games, but I'm looking to actually get a couple of distinct games to the table. I'd love to get a spy-themed version of Fate to the table. I took a look at Agents of Swing, but that didn't seem to really be what I was looking for, so I'm looking for something that kind of exists between that John le Carre and Robert Ludlum area. You know, somewhere in between those, a little more action, but not, you know, blowing stuff up in the streets kind of stuff. I've also been on a Robotech kick lately, and I've been picking up the new Palladium Robotech books, and so I'd love to get a game of that going. I feel like I need more than just a couple of nights to run that. It feels like that one really needs at least probably a six-month campaign to really get everybody a chance to really kind of have fun with it. I would like to get a chance to run some Dungeon World, a game that has kind of a minimal rule set but is a little harder on the GM than I think people first see it. It takes a little more improv skills by the GM to keep the game balanced.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like I've never played Dungeon World, but and I've never actually played Tremulous, but I have Tremulous, which uses the same basic rule set.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, it's one of those things where when you fail something, as the GM, it's your job to, you know, when the player says, okay, I rolled six or less, it's your job to say, okay, so now what happens? It's not just that you failed to hit the monster. You got tangled up with your friend behind you, and now you're both out of commission for the next combat round. Or, you know, those kind of things. You need to kind of constantly be on your feet and keeping an eye on how that goes. And then my last one is I'm going to aim at supporting one Kickstarter per quarter. Not really a monetary goal on that, but more of a try to find, if I find something really interesting, just to kind of go for it. And we'll get into that later when we get to the Kickstarters. So, but those are really kind of my my goals right now. Fate's a big one. I've been doing some reading on that, and I'd really love to get that to the table, but I feel like you need a group that's, you know, has really kind of sat down and come to grips with how Fate works.
Yeah, I have to say I really haven't.
Not a lot. Not many people I know have, honestly.
You know, I mean,
I know it's hugely popular, but it takes a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to play it at a convention or two,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me.
You have to change your mindset about how you approach. It really is a mindset change when you to approach how you play the game.
Yeah. No, and I get that, and I think that's probably my biggest stumbling block is I don't know if I can.
Me too. That's I'm in the same place. But I've got a stack of Fate books on my shelf that I am bound and determined to at least like, okay, I'm going to play this, and if I don't like it, it's out the door.
That's fair. What I would recommend, though, for Fate, more than any other game, you need episode zero to just hammer down the rules, because Fate, it's really easy to be essentially the person with the strongest personality basically dominates the situation here because of the way the mechanics are set up here.
Yep.
And you got to go in there with, hey, you know, I'd always recommend two words more than any other when dealing with Fate: niche protection. Make sure everybody can do something really cool.
Okay.
And it'll really cut down any logistical issues, because at least then they'll feel, oh, everybody will always feel like they can do something, mm-hmm. even if it's really weird.
Yeah, we tried to do Diaspora?
Okay. Yep.
You know, so it was it just never took off, just because of the guy that wanted to run it. I don't think he quite sat down and got everything together. We had gotten so far as to do Diaspora uses a slightly modified set of Fate, I believe. And we had gotten to the whole world generation, which is where, you know, every player generates two worlds and their characters from one of those two, and they pick. And then mm-hmm. you do the character generation, and, you know, through the character generation, you create the links with the other player characters. And so with that system, basically there has to be an episode zero, because everyone needs to make characters that are interlinked, and the only way to do that is to sit down together and create all your characters.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
So, I mean, the character generation stuff was interesting, but I think we were just like, eh. We didn't. It was interesting enough, but I don't think we had enough drive to actually push through for it. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
No, it does.
Yeah, it's definitely a system that I think enjoys a lot of popularity amongst a certain type of group, and then it just seems like it's really tough to get, especially your traditional role players, it just seems kind of hard to get them to, you know, and I'm saying this from someone who is a traditional role player. I had the very same issues that I'm talking about here. Just hard to get into that mindset of helping out the GM. And then the GM being able to balance the helping from the players while also keeping things dynamic enough so that the players can jump in and add their own elements of the story. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot to juggle.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like I had Mouse Guard, the RPG.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. You know, Burning Wheel system.
Yep.
I couldn't really get my head wrapped around the way they describe things in that rule book. I'm sure I could play it, but I just couldn't wrap my heads around the way they were trying to explain things.
It happens.
Well, Burning Wheel is kind of notorious for that, actually. So I had the core Burning Wheel books, and I went through them a couple times, not, you know, page by page, but I, you know, usually you can look at a game like, oh, okay, this is kind of what they're doing. It just, nothing stuck.
Yeah.
But Chris, you were going to say something about Fate. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's basically the long and the short of it. There is, it's a fun system, but it's a, basically, there, if you're not careful, it could easily become a battle of personalities at the table, even more so than regular game mechanics. Like, I was at a couple of Fate games during a con last year, and basically it felt a lot like, you know, because we hadn't built our characters together, everybody was kind of vying for, you know, that moment. And you just gotta, there's a bit of give and take here, and if your GM is very receptive to it, it can be a lot of fun. But if he goes kind of, oh, that's nice, goes on to the next person, you might feel like you're kind of left out. So, yep. You know, just something to think about when you do that thing. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, that's good, good advice to keep in mind. It's definitely something I realize is going to be, I'm going to have to take slow at first, maybe a couple of shorter, smaller sessions to kind of, you know, build up to something so that I'm not overwhelmed with how to get everything moving at the same time.
Would I recommend a one shot just for the first one? Like, do something kind of silly, kind of zany that doesn't really mean anything, just to break the ice, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
You know, like, there's a lot you can do with the system, and but if you're going from, like, say, D&D, maybe just start with something very similar. Like,
I've got a couple of books with different, like, I've got the first two Fate Worlds books. I've also got Starblazer Adventures and Legends of Anglaire.
Okay.
So I've got loads of material. I just got to find a group willing to give it a shot.
No.
That's understandable. Yeah, that's usually the white whale here. Like, unless they play D&D, sometimes it's like looking for a needle in a haystack sometimes when it comes to gaming.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it's so, like, even with the stuff that, even with Savage World, it was always kind of similar. You know, I mean,
oh yeah, if it's not D&D or Pathfinder, your hit ratio in terms of getting players can be, it can be tough.
I mean, I think that's the only thing that definitely, like, Savage World has it going for it, is it has some pretty interesting settings, and so because of those settings, people are willing to go, like, all right, I'll learn a new rule set.
In short, be game curious.
Yeah, I think so.
Gamers.
Yeah.
Poly gamers, that works.
So that's all I have for the new year. I'm sure other things will pop up over the coming months, but really those are my objectives at this point. You know, if I can get two or three of those marked off my list, I consider myself lucky.
Okay.
Makes sense to me.
Well, how about you, Chris?
Okay. Actually, I know exactly what I want to do this year. My buddy has been updating my game, a game we've written together, for 5th edition. I'm looking forward to trying it out and breaking it and seeing what, you know, what happens when you, you know, redesign a game for a different edition. And it's, yeah, I think I've mentioned in the past, so I'm not going to go into details here. But it's going to be fun just trying to learn the game mechanics behind it. Also, there's two games I want to try specifically. One's silly and one's kind of just, I won't lie to you, kind of jumping on a bandwagon. I want to try Cat of Cthulhu once in my life just to see what it's like and see how weird it is. And I want to try Tales of the Loop. Because I sponsored the Kickstarter. The book looks awesome. It looks interesting. I ain't going to lie. I'm of a certain demographic who probably remembers it firsthand. And it'll be fun just to see how it gets reinterpreted and stuff here.
Yeah, I did not back Tales of the Loop.
I have a group here locally that's playing it right now.
Oh.
It's just the feedback I've heard has been generally positive. They seem to be enjoying it. So, yeah. It's getting played.
You know, it'd be interesting to, you know, I don't know if one of them has time to ever come on. It would be interesting to get a report about it from them.
Oh, I can certainly see.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, I can talk into the vacuum all I want, but it's interesting to hear, you know, somebody else talk about something they're doing.
Okay. A little bit of fire goes a long, long way when it comes to a project, and it'd be interesting to see what other people think when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I finally broke my writer's block. I had a horrible case of writer's block last year, and it's kind of fun just working my way through the mechanisms and trying all these stupid little projects and seeing where they lead. You know, they may lead nowhere, they may lead anywhere. You never know. And, you know, sometimes you gotta, you know, when it comes to your creative muscle, the more you use it, the stronger it gets. And it's been fun just discovering a lot of this stuff. Like, I'm working on a couple of projects right now, some for the GM's Guild, some for just my own personal edification, and it's fun to create. I ain't gonna lie to you, and that's probably one of the reasons we're gamers in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a weird question.
Shoot.
Did you guys have any resolutions last year, or did you accomplish them?
You know what? I don't actually remember. I would actually have to listen to see if there was an episode where I talked about them. But but I can almost guarantee you that if I had resolutions, I probably did not accomplish them.
Okay, that's fair.
I think playing Mage the Ascent, Mage the Awakening was one of my, you know, it had been a long term goal, not just from last year, but I think that was one of my ones that I finally accomplished. Taught me a lot about the game, the system, and that kind of thing. So I think that was really a good learning experience for me. And I think that would probably be about it for me, honestly.
Yeah. If I had to guess for me, I probably said something along the lines of I think I wanted to at least do some more local cons, and that just never happened.
No, I understand.
You know, I mean, and matter of fact, I was actually thinking about this year. It's like, you know, I didn't even mention cons, and it's like I don't think – I have nothing against conventions, but I – right now I'm just not into going. And it seems weird, but I think it's just, no, it's just, this year is just not going to be my year for that. I think I know that I'm going to have too much going on to even do that. So maybe next year, but not this year. This year is going to be a no-con year for me, I believe.
Well, dude, you just got a house. That's kind of takes priority.
Yeah. Well, that, and I'm honestly, I am doing so many other things. So I don't think I just don't think that that's going to be, you know, likely. Even if I wanted to, I know that it wouldn't be likely, so I just have not put it on my list.
No.
Either one of you guys going to be doing any conventions this year?
I've already done, I take it back. I did one late last year. I've mostly attended them. I don't
Well, that's fine.
Do a lot of, I don't tend to do a lot of gaming at conventions, as I've had mostly middling to kind of negative experiences for both board gaming and role playing at conventions.
Yeah,
not sure if I'm just a bad chooser in terms of what I'm looking for, but I much prefer to game with people that I know their temperaments, and that I'm familiar with. So
I think that's probably where I'm at right now with most gaming. And it's like, it's weird because like on Roll20, you have a bad player. I know this sounds weird, but it's easy not to invite them back.
True. <Yeah.
laughs> You know, so.
Well, I kind of did something similar last year where I wanted to attend an online con, and I did, and I liked it. I didn't love it. Hmm. Like, the actual gaming experience was awesome, but the seminars felt like I was listening to a podcast.
Mm. Well, effectively, you were.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, you know, you didn't get the interaction that you would get face to face, and
I'm going
to do other ones, but it's if I do any conventions, it's going to be online, as simple as that, because it's ultimately cheaper.
Yeah, I think that definitely some sort of online panel is possible. It's just the technical portion of that is tough.
Yeah,
I mean, you almost literally have to. To do it properly, you almost have to have like a call-in log system, like, you know, radio stations do. You know, how they queue up callers, you know, for like talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only way you can possibly do that. You almost have to pre-filter the people And then it's like, well, those people, while you're pre-filtering them, they're not really listening to the rest of what's going on.
You know, they're going to be busy with other questions here. And you could use a chat program while they talk and just sort of read them off as you need them. But, you know, I've seen it done in the past.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's possible. I just don't think it's...
Yeah.
It's not technically impossible. I just think it's hard.
Yeah.
So speaking of hard, shall we get into the Kickstarters?
Absolutely.
Sure.
All right. Well, let's start with the elephant in the room, which is...
Oh, yes.
elephant in the room. The John Carter of Mars role-playing game.
Sign me up. I don't think I'm going to be able to resist this one. I really don't.
This one has actually already reached its goal. Matter of fact, it's
three times its goal.
Two and a half. And I mean, I love the idea of what was
almost
it?
Three times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love the idea of this one. It's just, you know, I've already backed Flash Gordon. I'm already getting Flash Gordon, and it's like right now I just don't need another system that I might not play this year.
Well, again,
sure you do.
It's basically the equivalent of every time I say that I'm going to cut back on my Kickstarters, something like this shows up, and it's, why can't I quit you?
Yeah. I mean, like, and it's sad because, you know, it's like, I like the John Carter Mars series.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was, it wasn't horrid, but it was definitely could have been better.
It got a bad rap, I think.
Well, it's interesting. There is a whole story about how basically... with everything going on, there was no way it was ever going to succeed.
Yeah, there's actually a book there that's called John Carter's and the Gods of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Where they go into the whole details how it was a perfect storm of a guy who was obsessed with perfection because he thought he only gets one shot at it and he may be right. And the fact that Marvel's doing all these other deals at the same time. And a lot of the way it got sunk is because of a stupid movie called Mars Needs Moms.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason they took out Mars out of the title of John Carter of Mars, which completely defeats the purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but tell me about it, man. They had William Dafoe as Tars Tarkas. If that can't sell it to you, I don't know what can sell it to you.
Yeah, so. Nothing, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I'm really tempted on this one.
Yeah, same.
They say it'll be out by June 2018. July 2018, I would not probably stake any significant amount of money on that actually happening.
Yeah.
You know, well, and I mean, I love the miniature sets that they have with this. I mean, you can get with these, supposedly.
Oh, nice.
You know.
Yeah. And it looks like it's the proprietary system has something very important that they say in the first paragraph. The core book is fully written. Which means they're trying to build their own proprietary system, but it's already been done and tested to some degree.
Yeah. Well, it uses the Modiphius' 2D20 system.
Which is the same thing for Conan and I think a couple of other games. So, yeah, they've already tested a lot of that stuff out. So,
okay.
So I mean, that's kind of nice. I mean, so, at least, you know, it's like, actually, me and a buddy of mine were just talking about Mutant Crawl Classics.
Mm-hmm.
Where the hell is it?
Yeah, that's the unfortunate effect of this stuff here.
You know, so
you buy and you kind of, well, I won't lie to you. Just because it gets funded doesn't mean you're getting it.
Yeah. Mm. So, but I understand that. And that's one of the.
DC has a really good rep, but, you know, for ultimately getting the product out. And last year they did give me the mother of all. They essentially gave me the ship for Star Lost, their version of it. You know, for their Gamma, you know, what is it? Yeah. Metamorphosis Alpha.
Right.
The thing is,
right.
Amazing. It costs an arm and a leg, though. So
yeah. Mm. So I mean, I like the idea of this one. It's just, again, too much other stuff going on, and I think, as much as I'd want to pick it up, I think it would just languish in my collection, and I downsized my collection when I moved.
Yeah, no,
that's always a good idea.
Yeah, that's something. Response or last year, where I realized that a good chunk of my Kickstarters are just going directly into the shelf. They're not even being used for research material, which is a lot of my older books are for.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
I mean, like, for example, I'll give you a good example of something that I backed that it just sits in my shelf. Interface Zero.
Yeah.
I've seen that at our local game store, yeah.
Yeah, it just, it's not that it's a bad game. And it's Savage Worlds, real, you know, it's Savage Worlds edition. It's just languishing in my bookshelf, so. But, you know, good news for people, if they want to get this particular game, they have the backing's already there for it. So if you just want to, and I think for, it's $20 US for the core rulebook and a PDF.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And even their, the level I'm looking at is the $100 level, which is the 75 pounds level, which comes with the collector's slipcase and the core rulebook, a game master screen, an adventure book, and then all the PDFs with it. It's actually mm-hmm. still a pretty good deal.
Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's, next up we have Infinity Galaxy Core Rule, science fiction action powered by the apocalypse. So,
just so what we're you back needed. To Dungeon World.
Dungeon World, yeah, exactly. So, if you like the Dungeon World rule set, you can get the PDF version for $15.
Yeah,
that's a good deal.
Yeah,
they have a little diagram as to how long it's going to take things to get done.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of fun. Manuscript second draft, third draft, final draft, editing, layout, design.
Yeah, someone actually, did at least some sort of basic, this is sort of a Gantt chart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's got a basic plan, which is more than a lot of Kickstarters I've seen.
Yeah,
true.
Like, they're basically coming out and saying, this is the time, this is the situation here. Yeah. I like the aesthetics. I don't know I played the Apocalypse system a couple of times. I'd have to try it before I can tell you for sure. Don't know if they're going to make their quota, though.
Yeah, because what are they asking? They're asking, they have 28 days to go. They're only asking $6,000. They got only a sixth of that. So
mm-hmm.
they'd have to get some significant buzz in order to get that up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the first couple of days, you usually should be at least hitting your 50% goal.
Yeah. Right.
And I do like the art. Like, I like the picture of their sci-fi Mars. Well, the red planet. I'm pretty sure it's Mars, but I can tell you for sure.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty nice.
You know, and so the art's amazing. It's just, and of course they're going for that era that we absolutely love. You know, we just finished ranting about Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
The idea of basically dressed in bad LeMay suits with really cool ray guns running around fighting aliens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, fluff-wise, it's probably up my alley. I don't know about the crunch, though, so we'll see.
All right, so next up we have Fairy Fire, a 5th edition supplemental, and it just describes itself as a stylish, glamorous fey bestiary and setting inspired by the 80s and 90s, which to me means not my thing.
Yeah.
Where does this fit into...
I have no idea.
...game? I feel like this is... feel like this is kind of a cyberpunk supplement.
It's someone's pet project. That's all I can describe it as.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone said...
They've got a long ways to go, too.
I hate to say it, and I mean this... I apologize to the creators if this is 100% wrong, but the way this looks to me, it really does remind me of when I went to a convention, I went to a panel where they were talking to authors about writing books, and there's always that one person that's like, I have all these campaign notes I went and making to the next greatest novel. And I know all the panelists are like, you're an idiot. Because you can just see it on their faces. And that's what this feels like. It feels like someone just didn't basically take the panelists' advice and probably not do it. and they're doing it.
It's like Nagel, and Nagel designed a My Little Ponies adventure supplement. That's really bizarre. Interesting aesthetic, but not
yeah, it definitely has that. It has some anime, obviously anime influence in here, and some other things that I don't know. I mean, I guess my suggestion to people is, I don't know.
Take a look at it.
It might be your thing, because I'm looking at it and I'm like, it's definitely not my thing.
Yeah,
but it might be your thing.
Okay, you know what it reminds me of?
What?
There was this TV show that came out like 1 or 2 years ago, which is basically a parody of the 80s. It's called Moonbeam City. And it kind of feels like that with Faye, kind of a cross between that and Shadowrun, because you can feel the neon without even opening your eyes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That may very well be.
Okay.
All right. Okay. We'll save that one for a little later. Let's go with, I guess, the guys at the Nameless Realms is doing a reprint of Folio Number 1. And they actually reached their goal. So I guess if you did not get their Folio Number 1, you can now, they've actually now kickstarted, which seems weird. Why would you need to kickstart this? Just do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Doesn't that seem a little weird? My first adventure was, I know it's been a fun thing, so in a ring.
Well, I know some of the pledge levels let you get, like, all the other backed issues of the folios and stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you guys tried this at all? Because I don't have a clue one way or the other.
You know, no. I think I mention them as they come up, but I've never actually tried them. Again, for me, it's just like, I don't do a lot of D&D right now of any, either first edition or fifth edition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
my luck with adventures lately has been really poor. I just find it, they're not worth my, not the way I run things, they just don't work out very well for me. So adventures are not high on my list of things to get.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. Well, you know, because
ours looks nice for it, though.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those ones that I'm curious about, but I don't know if I'm curious enough to get money through money in it. But they made their money, so that's always a good sign.
Yeah, $5 will get you the PDF, so.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to try it out, just to see, because, you know, you always want to start at the beginning when it comes to these sort of things. Yeah. You know,
so
unless it's something that grabs your eye.
Yeah, so next up is a kind of an interesting one, I would have to say. I mean, its goal was not that high, and it's already reached its goal. It is Frankenstein Factoria role-playing game? Is that how you would pronounce that second word?
Factoria.
Yep. You know, and their tagline is a rule light tabletop RPG where you play one of the Doctor's tragic creations.
Oh, man. That
is a very interesting thing. And it's $7 for the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the actual rule set is on this.
Yeah, I'm trying to read there. Okay, it looks like it's composed of 4 basic elements. Oh, bloody heck. It's head, torso, arms, and legs. You roll a d3 4 times and assign the following values to their chosen traits. And their body part determines a particular attribute like speed, mind, ability, and agility and strength.
Yeah.
And then basically you modify your traits accordingly here. So basically you're playing an abomination, which could be fun, but...
Artwork is gorgeous. I love the artwork for it. Kind of reminiscent of Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah. Oh, I'm agreeing completely. Like, that's just nice. Plus, it's, again, Frankenstein's Monster, which actually Gaming Credit did like a 4-part episode on, is probably the first sci-fi. You know, the new Prometheus, because of all the stuff that they end up, referring to.
Yeah, I could see
that. So, like, everything ranging from Paradise Lost to the Tragic of Gertz. Sorry, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that right. Like, it had so many different literary commentations and situations here. And the fact that Adam is such an amazing yet tragic character when you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you brought life and then you didn't know what the hell to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, to quote another famous sci-fi movie, an unready father with an unwanted child. It's fascinating. Like, this would be fun just as a one-shotter, depending on how dark you want to go. Although, I could easily see this going very grim derp if you're not careful.
Yeah.
You know, at the right party. But at the same time, it'd be fun to try once.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. I think this, you know, for $7, it might be interesting to get for the PDF.
If nothing else, it might make one hell of a one-shotter.
Yeah. All right. So, next up we have Children of the Apocalypse for Savage Worlds. And, you know... This is kind of up my alley. Unfortunately, again, I'm at my limit for what I can buy.
It's called space.
Yeah. I mean, even in PDF format, I just don't know if I'd want to. But I like the idea of a post-apocalyptic setting for Savage Worlds. because I've always wanted to do, I always kind of wanted to do Gamma World with Savage Worlds, and there have been some attempts at it. No, I mean, they really have, but I've never think I've really liked all the rules, because I think sometimes they get a little too literal in trying to translate. So, it's $19 for the PDF. And then,
that's not too bad.
Which is not bad. And then, what do we got here? I think it's $49 for the physical, which is just, to me, that's a little pricey. But I mean,
they're on only a third of the way to their goal at this point.
Yeah, so they still got 21 days to go. Yep. It's possible. But I mean, I like the idea. I just don't know.
I see that they mix in magic, setting rules to represent a high magic, high theology world.
Yeah.
So it's kind of getting to that kitchen sink Palladium Rifts point once you start mixing all of that stuff.
Well, I'm guessing their apocalypse is science is magic based.
Yeah, actually, it almost feels like it's almost after Call of Cthulhu in a lot of ways, just because the nine gods exert a heavy daily influence on society, scheming for advantage on their followers and the downfall of their enemies, and setting forth a complete plot point campaign for which the players contend with the gods themselves to determine the future of all humanity.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do mention it. In the tagline, they do say it is a epic fantasy setting. So
Yep.
I mean, it's take place in New England, so that is a certain tones and certain tropes in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the idea, but just not gonna. I again, probably not gonna have space on my bookshelf this year.
Best of luck to him.
Yeah. And finally, for I'm going to. List this one as our not a chance in hell of probably making their goal.
Oh my, you're not kidding.
Best deal, Fallen Kingdoms Volume 1. They're asking for $50,000. They got three backers for $301. I think the first part is it is whatever they're doing. It's its own RPG with its own rule system, and I know that's going to turn a lot of people off. And I know that sounds weird, but it's like, yeah, you know, if it was Savage World-based, you're like, okay, well, maybe. Or, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things where, not that D&D is the end-all to all fantasies, but a lot of people are like, why don't I just play D&D if I'm going to do a fantasy game?
Mm-hmm.
They really do.
One of any other number already pre-existing, published for 10 to 15 years, kind of.
The trick is, if you're going to build a new game engine or game system, you need a community before you can even think about doing a Kickstarter. And that may require you to do what Red Markets did a while back, which is essentially do the podcast step by step as they do the game. Mm. And that's one of the reasons it was ultimately successful and incredibly successful from the Kickstarter perspective. Because anybody who is a regular fan of, what was it, RRP... Yeah, it was role-playing public radio.
Hmm.
Was invested. And that's what you got to do when it comes to a new engine. Yeah. Make sure you got a market before you even think about doing that there and see if you can build a fan base. Like, you know, it sucks that it's not going to be fun because obviously this is somebody's, for lack of a better term, fantasy heartbreaker. But
yeah, it also looks like there's a lot of cards in this one.
Yeah. I think that very heavy video game influence. If you look at their classes, they have multi-target area of effect DPS. It just the Paladin is your tank, and the Guardian is your tank slash protector. And
I'm just saying when you scroll down, they have a. There's like this video where there's like in this video below we show you how to traverse the dungeons and the dungeon events work, and it's like I'm just looking and there's like some sort of map and there's just all these cards around. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm out already. And it's like it's not that I'm opposed to cards, but obviously I play Savage World, so I like to have a few cards, but that's just too many.
Yeah. Plus, if you look at the buy-in, if I'm reading this right, you don't get the game until you invest $100 in it.
That's the only option is $100.
Yeah. You know, if you do any other ones, you get a thank you. You get a custom screensaver, which
That's nice.
Well, so that makes it weird because it says it has three backers, but if you look at it at the 100 level, it says there's only two backers. And I don't see...
Someone backed out.
Yeah.
Is that probably.
Yeah. Well,
again, I'm never going to say no when it comes to somebody putting out a game, but I say I don't know enough to even think about getting near this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is... there might be some good ideas, some nuggets in there, but I think they might not want to start with a PDF version. And the cards are, I mean, that's what drives me away from Fantasy Flight games is their specialized dice, and they're, you know, they can support their, you know, they've got games on the market, and I won't buy most of them because of all their customized dice and such.
Plus there's lots of these little pieces that, you know, are going to go lost sooner or later.
Yeah.
Or if you forget them when you're supposed to bring them over to someone's house to play and you're like, oh, well, I forgot two of the decks. I guess we're playing, you know, we're going to play, Carcassonne
Pinochle
tonight. Yeah.
Exactly. And you need your plan B. But, we'll see.
All right. And
good luck to them.
Yep. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to briefly talk about the last three because they're all kind of the same thing of sorts. They're all printable terrain. Most of them. Matter of fact, they're all 3D printable terrain. There's the modular space walls, which has not reached its goal. It's asking for 500. It's at 2. And they don't have any... So far, the only thing I see is a bunch of computer renderings.
Yeah.
Oh, no. There's a few, I guess, that they printed. Okay, so there you go. And then he shows you, obviously, his sketchbook for... some of his stuff that he was doing. Again, I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that definitely 3D printable terrain and 3D printable miniatures for anyone who games with miniatures is definitely the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're just at that point. There's another printable science fiction structure STL pack that somebody else is doing. They have reached their goal.
Looks orange.
Well, yeah, it's printed in orange. So, I don't know. They look kind of cool, but I don't know if. And then he actually shows some examples of them painted. I don't know. I think this one, while it's funded, I would say probably this is more for. Probably like actual miniatures, like miniature games, probably like Warhammer or something. But I always bring it up because you never know because people love I love using terrain for other purposes. This last one is kind of weird. The Jungle Fever resin cast and 3D printable scenery. Because it looks like one of the things is this fantasy football scenery bundle. And then after that, they actually show you where they have all these weird walls and other things where you can do other things with it. And it has a very Aztec Mayan feel.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which, personally, I like. I think that's kind of cool. Yes. I just don't know when I would use it.
Well, you've got that Flash Gordon game coming up.
Yeah.
You know that is very true. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, honestly, I do have to say that these do look pretty fucking good.
They do. Some of them are really nice.
You know, I would say out of the three sets here... they definitely have the better looking sets, and some of it might just be because of the subject matter.
Yeah, well, it's got a very stylized look, and it seems that's why it sticks out.
Yeah.
And again, I'm getting flashbacks to Indiana Jones from these things.
Yeah, and these actually they list themselves as open lock compatible, which is I guess a standard that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so it's modular, so you can add it to your other set if you have a similar type.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, so those are the Kickstarters. I mean. I will not lie, there are obviously more Kickstarters than this, but I had to start somewhere, so I just kind of picked some of the more recent ones, and anything that's prior to this that I missed, I'm sorry, I apologize, I just had to choose a stopping point.
Well, dude, you could easily go into the abyss just by the sheer number of people trying to get stuff out nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's any closing top thoughts before we kick this set this off because you know we're actually going to be just a little under an hour over an hour.
You want to do the bundle of holding?
Oh
yes.
Yeah, I you know what? I always forget the Bundle of Holding. What is the Bundle of Holding this?
Well, this one should interest you. The Hellfrost Essentials and Hellfrost Atlas just went up. Looks like they've got almost 3 weeks left, 20 days at this time. And there are two different bundles. There's a Hellfrost Essentials, which starts with $12.95 for the player collection. It looks like 5 books. And then if you go up to the Game Master collection, which adds another 5 books, looks like the total for that is about $25. So $13 for the player collection and $25 for the Game Master collection for the Hellfrost Essentials. Then when you go to the Hellfrost Atlas, there's the starter collection for that is $18. Comes out with the Hellfrost Adventure Codex and Hellfrost City books 1 through 5. The bonus collection is the Atlas and map sheets and a Resource Management Second Edition. I'm not sure what that is, honestly, but that the bonus collection is going for goodness gracious, just a little over $28 right now.
The tagline for the Hellfrost Resource Management Second Edition is, what sort of ruler would you be? So I'm guessing it's some sort of rules for being in charge.
So I'm not familiar with the Hellfrost setting.
Me either.
Have you ever played it?
Okay. Yeah, part of that's what I was going to ask you guys. So, yeah, other than the fact it seems to be it's a fantasy setting, and that's pretty much all I know about it. So if any of our audience knows anything about it,
yeah.
Feel free to give us the elevator speech.
Here's what the Hellfrost Resource Management 2nd E describes. It says, whether you want to adopt a noble title and run a village, take up the mantle of high priest in a temple, command a loyal mercenary company, or invest your hard-earned savings in running an inn, this newly expanded resource management source book is for you. Create a resource and use ruler actions to grow their business, diplomacy, and warfare. Annual events represent how wide the world affects your resource. Create your resources neighbors, be they fair or foul, and use a new streamlined combat system to defend your resource or take your fight to your enemies.
Okay.
So it's a 71-page book on basically
how to kind of like build your own like fiefdom, as it were.
Yeah, whatever that may represent, whether it be like, mm-hmm. as they say, an inn or I could, you know what, this would actually might be an interesting read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Possible, yeah.
You know, out by itself. So.
So thirdly, we have the Chronicles of Darkness. There's a player collection, which includes the core rulebook for the New World of Darkness, Armory Reloaded, and Skin Changers. And then if you go up to the Storyteller collection, which is just over $28, you add in Antagonists, Urban Legends, Tales from the 13th Precinct, Dogs of War, and Runes of Ur. This is an interesting collection if you want to get into the New World of Darkness, but I feel like there's some books that are kind of missing from here.
Yeah, it's definitely going for its own feel here. It's kind of like you're getting all the source books associated with the World of Darkness.
Well, it is the source books, but it's not all of them. Like, Second Sight isn't there, which has all your kind of bush-level psychics and magic users, which would be is a really fun supplement. I feel like this is kind of the, you know, the supplements that they're not – probably not selling that well. I'm sorry, but, like, World of Darkness Armory, the game's not a – it's not a technical – you know, I need a 45 as opposed to a 44 game. You don't need an entire book of weapons. That's just not a thing.
No. That's something you probably get more. Well, again, it's a different type of system. Besides, who cares if you have a Colt 45 if you don't have the right ammo for it against the supernatural horde that you're about to fight?
Yeah, it's this. I wish they had some different books in this. Or at least one of the core books from one of the other lines, like maybe Vampire or... you know, maybe Werewolf, something to kind of, because they included Skin Changers, and I don't have that one, and I haven't looked at it, but I think that Second Sight would have been a good addition to this list, but it's not on there at all, so not a bad deal. I think, you know, maybe there are better deals out there.
Yeah, well, if you're missing those books, pick it up, otherwise it might not be your cup of tea.
Yeah.
Yep. Alrighty. And so with that, I'm going to say, any other closing remarks?
No.
I'm good.
Then I think I think we can put the first episode of 2018 to bed, and hopefully in about 2 weeks we'll record again.
Only 25 more to go?
Exactly. Only 25 more to go. Well, I think there's only been 1 year we've even gotten to 26.
True enough. Yeah, and if anybody has any topics for future episodes, just let us know.
You know what? That's what I forgot. Let's throw that out there. If you have anything you want us to cover, any comments on anything, you know, shoot us an email at info@rpcircus.com. You know, go to our Facebook page. There should still be a link on our Facebook page to send us an audio comment, which we have not gotten in a long, long time. I don't think people really bother with that anymore. I think, you know what? I think some people really miss the old dial call line.
Yeah, that's possible.
I used to have an 888 number that people could call in. Just dial 888. And then people would complain, I can't send you a voicemail from overseas. And now I have a way to do that, and no one does anything. You know.
It's always the case.
Yeah. So with that, you know, like I said, just shoot us an email at info@rpgcircus.com, and we'll see what we can do. We'd love to hear from you.
Exactly.
And with that, see you guys in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.